Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan in today for Joe Rex Road. Ryan Porth as well here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in one of our favorites, Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet, also host of the 31 Thoughts podcast as well with Elliot Friedman. Jeff, what's going on, brother? How are we doing? Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Oh, no. The pressure is all mine. How are you guys doing? Looking forward to what could be a closeout game tonight in Tampa.
Absolutely. Let's start there. Montreal able to stay alive in Game 4 and avoid the sweep.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay going for the second consecutive Stanley Cup tonight on home ice at Amalie Arena. What have you made of this series so far, and what kind of a chance would you give Montreal to stay alive tonight and force a Game 6?
You know, it's a really good question, because you look at this one and you even look at how Game 4 went, where Tampa, right out of the gate, you know, the first 15 minutes just dominated the Montreal Canadiens. I joked online that they'll only need to flood half the ice at the first intermission. That's how tilted the rink was. And you say to yourself, there's no way the Montreal Canadiens can hang in this high-rent district with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then there's Josh Anderson, who makes a 1-0 Montreal, because that's how hockey goes. And the Montreal Canadiens are off to the races. I can't really see how Montreal wins this series. Like, I have a hard time believing they're going to win four straight games against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Having said that, this is the Cinderella team. This is the team that, you know, swept the Winnipeg Jets, took out the Vegas Golden Knights, eliminated the Maple Leafs after being down 3-1. You keep hearing things about, you know, ghosts of the Forum and the ghost of Jean Béliveau and Rocket Richard and all this historical lore that Montreal Canadiens fans love to bring up. And you say to yourself, you know, is the story really over? Is there really life left in the Montreal Canadiens, or was Game 4 just the dead cat bounce? And now they're going into Amalie Arena tonight to finally take their medicine. I don't know. I don't see how they can do it, but with a hot Carey Price, if he does indeed heat up here, I guess anything's possible for the Habs.
Jeff, assuming that the Lightning win tonight, or the Stanley Cup in general, which we all believe they will, considering it's been close to 100 years since a team that was down 3-0 in the Stanley Cup final came back to win the championship, who are you giving your Conn Smythe vote to? Nikita Kucherov, Andrei Vasilevsky, or Braden Point?
To me, it's Kucherov. To me, it's Nikita Kucherov, not just for the points, but how dynamically he changes that power play specifically. I mean, there's a couple of things that Kucherov does probably better than anybody in the game. One, gets the zone. No one gets the zone easier than Nikita Kucherov. Two, I don't know anyone, Adam, that finds seams better than Nikita Kucherov with consistency. Like, to the point where you say to yourself, why are you making this extra pass? Why are you doing this? You get a chance to rip it, and then when he makes that play and it ends up in the back of the net, you realize, why am I trying to criticize a genius here? And and really, when you watch Nikita Kucherov play, you know, that's what we're watching. Like, here's the interesting thing about Tampa to me, and you see this in Kucherov. We look at Tampa and we say, wow, what a highly skilled team. And you marvel at the passing, and you marvel at the power plays, and you marvel at how they're able to fire the puck around. And when they start doing it, you know, you hear Sweet Georgia Brown playing in the background. This is a nasty, grumpy team. Like, I don't think that Tampa gets enough credit for being, you know, a dirty team, a nasty team, a grumpy team, a miserable team. And that's Kucherov as well. I mean, he's one of the most miserable players on this team. He's a pain to play against, A, because he's so good, but two, because he doesn't make anything easy for you. He's both slippery and grumpy and nasty all at the same time. This is a team in Tampa that is real tough to play against. It's a team that leaves a bruise. It's a team that can score suddenly. And to me, all of that is wrapped up in this one player who is, you know, who jumps in after a season after a surgery and is demonstrating he's the best player in the game right now. to me, with all due respect to Andrei Vasilevsky, who's been fantastic, with all due respect to Braden Point, who's same, to me, there's a cut above everyone, and that's Nikita Kucherov.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Jeff, we are now just 2 weeks away from the expansion draft in the NHL with Seattle coming into the mix. We know what happened with Vegas last time around. Obviously, an incredible start to the beginning of their franchise going to the Stanley Cup Final. And probably a lot of deals made that some general managers around the league wish they could have back. How much of a learning experience do you think that expansion draft with Vegas was? And how much better prepared do you think general managers could be this time around with Seattle coming into the fold?
That is such a great question. And you know what? It's interesting because when the expansion rules were first revealed and we learned that, okay, it's going to be the same that Vegas had, you know, everybody, like to a person, everybody in the NHL, all the general managers said the same thing. We're not going to make the same mistakes. We're not going to make the deals. We're not going to overthink ourselves. Just take the player you want that we have available and be done with it. But now as the expansion draft approaches, we're starting to hear a different tone out of a lot of GMs. As you know, they're deciding, you know, how they want to configure their expansion draft roster and who they want to protect and who they are prepared to lose and how much they're prepared to sacrifice to make sure they don't lose any players. I think the strategy from Seattle is going to be different. And, you know, you have a look at some of the coaching hires and they probably reflect the fact that this is a team that, unlike Vegas, is probably going to go with more of an accent on youth. I mean, that's why you bring in assistant coaches like Jay Leach and Paul McFarland, players that have worked with younger athletes before, specifically Paul McFarland. Also did a wonderful job with the power plays of the Florida Panthers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unlike Vegas, who went with more of a veteran lineup, I think Seattle goes with a younger lineup. And from what we're hearing is general managers are trying to do deals with Ron Francis to make sure they can protect the assets they want to protect. The problem is that the prices are sky high for Seattle. And we know that Seattle is going to be in the business of selecting players, specifically defensemen, that they turn around and trade for either picks or prospects. And front and center there is, I would have to assume, the captain of the Calgary Flames, Mark Giordano, was a Norris Trophy winner a couple of seasons ago. So I think that initially, it sounded like the GMs didn't want to outthink themselves or overthink themselves and, you know, just allow Seattle to take a player that they want. You think of Minnesota and Matt Dumba. But as the actual expansion draft gets closer and closer, I think a lot of GMs are very much in the mood to do business, let's just say, with Ron Francis and the Seattle Kraken.
Jeff Merrick with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Excuse me, can't even say the host's name right of the show on ESPN.
It's early.
Yes, it is.
That's right.
Don't worry, it's early. I always break in my new tongue early too in the morning.
Yes.
I know what you're going through.
I've only had one cup of coffee. Jeff, over on The Athletic today to promote my own company, we have a story titled, "Is This the NHL's Summer of the Blockbuster? Five stars who could be traded." And you and your teammate at Sportsnet, Elliot Freeman, have had these discussions on your 31 Thoughts, soon to be 32 Thoughts podcast. And the five players that we have listed in this story, Jack Eichel, Seth Jones, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Johnny Gaudreau, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Of those five players, I was going to say who is going to be the easiest to trade, but none of this is going to be easy. So let's rephrase it this way. Of those five players, which will involve the least complex deal?
Ooh, wow. That is a big one as I click on your piece right now, Adam. I think they're all going to be complicated deals. I mean, I think Kuznetsov could be easy because it very much seems like Washington is done with him. But then having said that, the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, I would maintain, and I could have made the argument for the Conn Smythe Trophy for Evgeny Kuznetsov. They won the Stanley Cup. because of the presence and the performance of Yevgeny Kuznetsov. So you don't just want to hand off the asset, you know, because you're done with Kuznetsov, you're done with the act, and you'd like the salary cap space. I don't know that any of these deals. I don't know that any of these deals are easy. I don't know that any of these deals are simple. I mean, they sound simple when we do talk radio. It's like, oh, yeah, Jack Eichel to the New York Rangers, call it done. Oh, Johnny Gaudreau to the Philadelphia Flyers, local boy goes home story, and et cetera, and you're off to the races. You know, Seth Jones, we strongly suspect Chicago is trying to unite the Jones brothers and move Duncan Keith and bring in Caleb, and he becomes the carrot to bring in Seth Jones. And that's all done. But all of these have, drama behind all of them. I don't know that there's a 2-foot putt there anywhere other than maybe depending on how Washington feels about Kuznetsov. Because if they just want to give him away, they can give him away. If they want to make a strong hockey deal, I think that's going to be challenging. But you know, I mean, Adam, you know hockey. You know internally, Washington's pretty much done with the Yevgeny Kuznetsov.
Jeff, last thing for you here. The Predators in an interesting spot this offseason. They are eliminated in the first round against Carolina. They played extremely well down the stretch to get in the playoffs. But obviously some changes still to be made. Victor Arvidsson trading to the LA Kings. The expansion draft coming up in a couple of weeks as well. What do you kind of make of where David Poile and this Predators team is right now, and how busy of an offseason do you think this could be for the Predators?
I don't think that David Poile is done by any stretch of the imagination. I think the Victor Arvidsson deal might be a harbinger of other deals. You know, interesting that the player we all thought that would be traded come trade deadline last year before UC Saros went on an incredible run and helped get Nashville in the playoffs, Matthias Ekholm, you know, he's sort of moved from the territory of he's gone to he's going to be extended. But I don't think that David Poile sits on his hands this offseason. I think that Poile still has moves that he will make. I still think that he'll be busy, as busy as he can be, given salary cap in free agency as well. But I don't think that... I don't think that we should be too complacent with this Nashville Predators roster. I don't know if it's going to look profoundly different, but you know that David Poile is going to look to change the mix as soon as next season, for sure.
Absolutely. Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet, host of the 31 Thoughts podcast as well, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rextro. Jeff, appreciate you so much taking time to join us this morning.
Happy to do it. Anytime, gentlemen. Enjoy the day.
Absolutely. You as well. Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet, our guest here on Robbie and Rextrode. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Jeff had to say there. Look ahead to Game 5 tonight of the Stanley Cup Final as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rextrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tonight, the Sounds take on Gwinnett, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. The pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 5:50 and first pitch is at 6:05. Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza Company. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rextrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet for joining us in the last segment. Adam, Game 5 coming up tonight between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens in the Stanley Cup Final. Tampa Bay back at home with the ability to close things out tonight and win their second consecutive Stanley Cup, becoming the first team since the Penguins in 2016 and 2017, much to the chagrin of Predators fans, to win two consecutive Stanley Cups. I mean, it looks like, I guess, they're going to play tonight. I mean, Hurricane Elsa has come through, now been downgraded back to a tropical storm, and it's rolling through the Florida area right now. So I think the plan right now is to play the game tonight for the NHL, but we'll see what ends up happening on that front. Assuming the game is played, what sort of a chance do you give Montreal to stay alive tonight and force a Game 6 back at the Bell Center coming up in a couple of days? It feels like tonight is kind of the storybook ending that Tampa Bay's been looking for, with an opportunity to close this out on home ice.
You would certainly think that, And remember, of course, the Lightning won the Stanley Cup last season in the bubble. So no one there to celebrate but themselves. And although the atmosphere in Montreal has been exquisite, as we expected it to be, the building is not full. In Tampa, the building is full. Their families can be there, which they weren't allowed to be last season or this season because the Canadian government did not grant exemption to the Lightning's family members to cross the border and attend the game on Monday. But I do feel like this is the end for the Montreal Canadiens. I think, you know, what are the chances that the Lightning are going to go, 0-for-5 on the power play the other night?
They had some good looks,
they
too.
They had some great looks, including Nikita Kucherov, who had a gimme on the doorstep near the end of the game. It went off the post. I think tonight is it. And I called my shot yesterday. I said that Andre Vasilevsky was going to pitch a series-clinching shutout for the fifth consecutive series, dating to last year's Stanley Cup final against the Dallas Stars. Already an NHL record for consecutive series-clinching shutouts. I said he's going to extend it to 5 tonight. It would be great for the Lightning to be able to celebrate their second consecutive Stanley Cup in front of their home fans because they weren't able to last year. You know, Tampa, they haven't had a lot of success as a city lately winning championships. So
yeah, it's been a while.
Anything, it's been, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long wait for the citizens of Tampa to celebrate a championship. But I think it's over tonight. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a massacre. But I think the Lightning will impose their will tonight and make it clear that they're going to win the game.
I think they win by 3 goals tonight. I think Tampa Bay is going to put their foot on the throat of Montreal, and it'll be over with tonight. And if that's the case, and the Lightning are able to wrap this up, whether it's tonight or at some point in this series, and they win back-to-back Stanley Cups, where do they start to fit in of the teams we've seen over the last 15 to 20 years in terms of the great teams in the NHL? We've seen the Blackhawks go through their dynasty. They win 3 cups in 5 years. We've seen the Penguins win 3 cups in Sidney Crosby's tenure there. This would be the second for Tampa Bay during this current tenure that they have here with this group, with, I would have to assume, most of the same team coming back next year. There are a couple decisions they're going to have to make from a salary cap perspective, but the core of this group is going to be back again next year with another opportunity to go for it. As you factor in some of the great teams that we've seen in the NHL over the last couple of decades, where does this Tampa team start to rank in your mind if they're able to get this done and close out their second consecutive Stanley Cup?
I think they're certainly in the conversation. You know, perhaps they need to win another one after this, if not next year, maybe the year after. You know, 3 cups in 4 years, 3 cups in 5 years. But, you know, I do think that the Lightning, you know, I do think what they've been able to do over these past two seasons has been remarkable, considering what these past two seasons have looked like. I know that they have been shortened seasons because of the pandemic, but, you know, they were in the bubble, you know, from beginning to end. You know, that was a couple of months away from family, you know, where you were basically enclosed in, you know, in a small, well, not a small space, because they were staying at luxury hotels with plenty of things to do, but they were away from their families. They weren't able to, you know, come and go as they pleased. This year was a bit different. There was a bit more freedom than in previous seasons, but considering the condensed schedule, you know, the way that the pandemic altered the schedule last season with the break in the spring, coming back, having to ramp up again, I do think they deserve a lot of credit. I do think that adds to the accomplishment that they were able to win consecutive Stanley Cups, assuming they win tonight or at some point in the series, under such unique circumstances.
I kind of like the makeup of this group. I may like them better than those Blackhawks teams and those Pittsburgh teams. Like, the star power, like, nobody's Sidney Crosby. Kucherov's great. I still don't think Kucherov is Crosby-level great when it comes to in his prime driving a team to a championship. But, like, think about this Tampa Bay roster. Like, how loaded it is at forward. They've got a great defense core, obviously headlined by Victor Hedman. And you got the best goaltender in the world. Like, there's zero weakness with this group. Like, it's hard to poke holes in really anything that they do. I mean, they are loaded from top to bottom, and they play every aspect of the game so well. I've not seen many teams like this where they're just so good in every area. I mean, even the killer instinct, like not losing back-to-back games in the playoffs, and Vasilevsky shutting the door when he's got an opportunity to do it, closing out four straight series with a shutout. I mean, I think this is a great team, and that this core is not going anywhere. They're going to be right back in the mix again next year.
Yeah, they check off a lot of the boxes. I mean, I wrote a story recently about how far the Predators are from being a Stanley Cup contender again, and I compared them to the eight teams that advanced to the second round, and the Lightning checked off 9 of the 10 boxes. The Predators, on the other hand, checked off 5 of the 10 boxes. You know, the Lightning, they're loaded up front. You know, I think, you know, Jeff actually made this point on the podcast, on his 31 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Freeman, talking about the game the other night. You know, Matthew Joseph sets up Patrick Maroon for the tying goal late in the game, and Matthew Joseph had barely been in the lineup for the Lightning. And I believe it was Jeff who said, you know, on 30 other teams, Matthew Joseph is in the lineup every night. And Matthew Joseph could not find a regular spot in the Lightning's lineup because they're so deep at forward. You know, there really is a lot to like the makeup of their team. You know, their secondary players would be primary players on a lot of teams. Someone like Yanni Gourde or Blake Coleman or Barclay Goodrow, Pat Maroon. A lot of these players would be, you know, relied upon a lot more on lesser teams, and it's a credit, you know, to the talent evaluators in the Tampa organization. And somebody, you know, brought up a great point the other day on Twitter. I mean, you even think of someone like Jonathan Marchessault. Jonathan Marchessault, now playing for the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, came up through the Lightning system, then left for the Panthers before going to the Golden Knights as part of an expansion draft trade. You know, Carter Verhaeghe, who played a role in the Lightning winning the Stanley Cup last year, had a great season for the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
You know, they have been able to find impact players and develop impact players, which is a credit to, you know, Steve Yzerman, who was the GM beforehand, Julien Brisebois, who's the GM now, and who was reared under Steve Yzerman. You know, the Lightning are a model franchise for drafting and developing. Think about all of the players that we've named who have had an impact for this team. They're homegrown players. Kucherov, Point, Tyler Johnson, Victor Hedman. You know, they were a part of this. Andrei Vasilevsky. They were drafted by this team. You know, like, that's the interesting thing. When you look at the Predators, you know, how many, you know, especially now that Victor Arvidsson has been traded, you know, how many players on their team, you know, were drafted and developed by them? You know, not very many. They're a team that's been mostly put together by trades and free agent signings, which is problematic. I mean, you could kind of throw Philip Forsberg in there. He was a trade, but he was young. He was, you know, he didn't have any NHL experience when he was traded. You know, he was developed by the Predators, but, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, Colton Sissons, you know, Yakov Trenin, Elie Tolvanen, and there are more players coming up, but think about, like, the players that have been a major part of this team over the past couple of years.
Sure.
You know, on the defensive end, sure, Roman Josi, Matias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, you know, UC Saros in goal, but forward specifically, not a lot of high impact forwards. I know, which is a whole another can of worms, but the Lightning have been able to do that.
And now here we sit 2 weeks away from the expansion draft in the NHL. Could we see a move made by the Predators before then? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Thursday night, you win a prize pack and a 4-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Make sure you participate tomorrow morning, coming up at 9:45. 45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porth here with you, streaming live on YouTube, on Periscope, and on Twitch as well. And Adam, we are 2 weeks to the day away from the expansion draft.
Thank goodness.
In the NHL. We're almost there. We've gotten to the point where it's right around the corner. The light's at the end of the tunnel, my friend.
Hey, Adam, is UC Saros exempt?
Is he going to be protected?
Go eat some Lunchables.
What's been the most popular question you've gotten this year about the expansion draft? It's not as bad as the Vegas one. I feel like you've been spared a little bit this year.
I have been spared. I think the most common question I have received is regarding Alex Carrier's eligibility.
Yeah.
Because, as most people know, and if you don't, every team has to expose, I believe it's one defense, is it two forwards and one defenseman, or one defenseman and two forwards with a certain threshold? I can't remember if it's...
I can't either.
But there's a certain threshold of games that
yeah.
you have to have, that in terms of players that need to be exposed, either you know games this past season or combined games over the previous two seasons. And Carrier has not reached that threshold, but he is still eligible. The Predators just have to expose, I think it's one defenseman.
Yeah.
That meets that criteria. Matt Benning and Mark Borowiecki both do. So just because Carrier has not reached the games played threshold does not mean that he is exempt. So Carrier is eligible for the expansion draft. So I would say that's the most common question I've received in the last couple of months.
And now the question is, what is the strategy going to be for the Predators as the expansion draft approaches? You got to have the names turned in by July 17th. And the expansion draft itself taking place on July the 21st. David Poile was on last week with Darren Donica Chase and had an interesting approach to what's going to happen with the Predators as the expansion draft draws nearer. Here's what Predators general manager David Poile had to say last week on Darren Donica Chase.
If you look at what we have to do on our protected list, I mean, you can either protect three defensemen and seven forwards, or you could go four and four. And either way, to me, we have a pretty good player available for Seattle. I've had a couple of conversations with them. Ideally, if we could strike a deal so I had certainty as to who we would lose, I would probably do that.
So that was David Poile last week on Darren Donica Chase saying if there's a way to strike a deal with Seattle knowing who you would lose, that's probably an approach that David Poile and the Predators would be interested in. I've got a couple of questions for you, Adam. Number one, what do you think of that? Do you think it's possible the Predators could strike a deal with Seattle before the expansion draft? And number two, he brought up there you could go seven forwards or three defensemen, or you could go four forwards and four defensemen. He did not bring up the five defensemen, three forwards approach with the eight skaters that we saw the New York Islanders do back in the last time around with this expansion draft with Vegas. I have operated under the assumption that that's probably the most likely route for the Predators is to protect five defensemen with Ellis, Carrier, Fabro, Ekholm, and Roman Josi. Do you agree with that? What do you think the most likely scenario is for the Predators as the expansion draft now approaches?
Well, first I would like to clarify what I was trying to say about Alex Carrier. So each team has to expose two forwards and one defenseman that are A, under contract in 21-22,
yep.
and either played in 27 or more NHL games this past season, or 54 or more in the past two seasons. So in the case of Carrier, he does not meet the 50, you know, he does not meet the 27 games played this season or 54 last season, but Benning and Borowiecki do, so the Predators are clear there, so Carrier is eligible. As to your actual question, you know, the Predators are going through all of their, you know, they're doing mock expansion drafts just like all of us are, and you know, five defensemen is something, you know, that they have, you know, considered as they've been going through their options. Oftentimes when people think of the eight skater, they just assume it's four and four because that's what most teams choose to do,
right?
You know, again, we'll see what happens between now and the 17th when they have to submit their list. But you know, the question that I keep going back to when I'm thinking of what the Predators should do: can you name more than three forwards on this roster that are worthy of protection? That's the question that I ask myself, and I often come up with the answer being no. I cannot come up with three forwards who are more valuable than the five defensemen that you listed. You know, for example, would you consider someone like Yakov Trenin more valuable to the Predators than either one of Alex Carrier or Dante Fabro?
No.
Which, you know, that's the question you have to ask yourself. And to me, as I just said, as I've asked myself that question, I can't think of more than three forwards worthy of protection on this roster.
Well, the interesting ones, I think, are Yarncroke and Sissons, because I think Forsberg is a slam dunk to be protected. I think Luke Cunning is a slam dunk to be protected as well. And now with Arvidsson gone, I don't think they're going to protect either Johansson or Duchesne. I could be wrong. I don't envision them protecting either one of those guys. And we'll get to more of on them coming up here in just a second. But Yarncroke and Sissons, I think, is going to be what that last spot comes down to if you go the five defenseman route. Sissons has got more term left on his deal. Now, we saw last year Yarncroke very important to this group. I mean, he almost led him in scoring. So we know what sort of value he can bring to the table. To me, that's where the decision could come down to. If you go the five defenseman route, is it going to be Yarncroke or Sissons that's that last guy's protected? But to your point, the list of forwards that are worthy of this conversation, I think, is very short with this Predators team.
So 4 years ago, of course, the major decision the Predators had, first of all, it was so much easier 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we knew they were going to protect their top four defensemen. We knew they were going to protect Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. Basically, the only thing we needed to know was, is it Calle Yarncroke or James Neal? And
yep,
it was Calle Yarncroke. And I talked to David on the phone after that expansion draft, and I asked him about that decision and what went into making that decision. And I remember he called it a quote-unquote business decision to protect Calle Yarncroke over James Neal, explaining that at the time, Yarncroke had 5 years left on his contract at $2 million per season. James Neal had 1 year left in free agency, and David was unsure of whether or not James was going to be back with the team after that season. So he made what I believe to be the prudent decision and let James Neal go. You know, James had another 20-goal season in his first season in Vegas. The team made it to the Stanley Cup final. Since then, James's career, you know, has been on the downturn. He is a buyout candidate this summer.
Yep.
For the Edmonton Oilers. He went to the Calgary Flames, traded for Milan Lucic, and now, you know, looks to be on the outs in Edmonton. So using that same logic from 4 years ago, Calle Yarncroke has 1 year left on his contract. Colton Sissons has 5 years left on his contract. So by that logic, it is a smarter business decision to protect Colton Sissons over Calle Yarncroke. So in that conversation, I would choose Colton over Calle because of
that. Makes sense.
That's my Porth. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Thank you.
Some niceness from Ryan Porth.
I don't know if there's really another route you can take with this.
Well, and like, we have somebody texting in saying protect Granlund and Tolvanen. Well, Granlund's a free agent and Tolvanen's not eligible.
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Yes, Granlund is a free agent. That is not to say that Seattle can't take unrestricted free agents. And I believe the rule is, first of all, I believe they'll have a window to talk to pending unrestricted free agents to see if there's interest. And if a team selects a pending unrestricted free agent off of a team's roster and then signs that player, that counts as the player. So
yeah,
if it were Mikhail Granlund, for example, Mikhail Granlund would be the player lost. The Predators wouldn't lose another player on top of
But he's
not signing with Seattle. And Tolvanen is exempt, so you don't have to worry about that.
We'll continue the conversation on the expansion draft when we come back, including asking this question. How far would you be willing to go if you're David Poile and the Predators to rid yourselves of either Johansson's contract or Duchesne's contract? We'll get to that coming up next. As also, taking your thoughts, as always, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Join 102.5 The Game tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway and get some game swag, plus register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head on over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com and tune into the match on ESPN 94.9. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porth here with you discussing the expansion draft in the NHL. Now 2 weeks away, officially. 2 weeks from today, the expansion draft taking place. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Rich texting in, I would roll the dice and keep Yarncroak. He is a very consistent player. So what do you think the idea of protecting Yarncroak again, even though just 1 year left on that contract?
Well, I think unlike the James Neal situation 4 years ago, you could see Cali Yarncroak re-signing with the Predators.
Yeah.
So I understand that point. That is something certainly to consider. You know, the thing that works in Colton's favor, you know, is certainly the cost certainty. You know what his cap it's going to be for the next several years. You know, Cali has played under an incredibly team-friendly deal since he signed that contract. Not to say he's going to break the bank on his next contract, but he is, as the texter said, a very valuable member of this team. I think you can perhaps look at it a bit differently because, you know, like I said, you could see Cali Yarncroak continuing to be a member of this team past next season with a new contract. You know, especially in a flat cap world, knowing that you have Colton Sissons under contract for under $3 million for the next 5 years, I mean, I think there's a certain comfort level with that.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. SL in Knoxville texting in. As long as the Preds keep Johansson and Duchesne, their underperformance is the players' fault. But once you unload them, they become, quote, bad contracts. And Poile will never admit to that. I don't know if I buy that. Like, I think at this point, if you gave David Poile some truth serum and you told him you could rid yourself of one of those contracts in this expansion draft, I think you'd do it.
I think he's admitting by not protecting Johansson or Duchesne that they're bad contracts.
I would agree.
Without publicly stating that.
And I think it's important. I think there's an important distinction here. And Porth, you and I talked about this on the Insiders podcast, I believe, yesterday. Or we talked about it on the show. I did so many things on 102.5 yesterday. I can't keep my facts straight.
It was 102.5 the Vingan yesterday.
It was
102.5 the Vingan. Doesn't have the same ring to it. When Ryan Johansson signed his contract in the summer of 2017, an 8-year, $64 million contract, I don't think a lot of people had a problem with it then. Ryan Johansson was in the prime of his career. If not for that freak thigh injury he suffered in the Western Conference Final, who knows what he could have done in the Stanley Cup Final against the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was incredible in that postseason.
Yep.
It made all of the sense in the world. Was he overpaid? Yeah, but that's what you do in this situation. They weren't going to let him go, considering what they gave up to get him, Seth Jones, of course, and how important he had been to that team. So I think at the time, you could understand that contract. It hasn't aged well, but at least at the time, I do not recall a lot of people being upset about the contract then.
No, people were happy about it, yeah.
Matt Duchesne, on the other hand, at that price, never made a lot of sense. And I remember leading into free agency 2 summers ago, there were a lot of reports from insiders such as Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Freeman, Darren Dreger, saying that Matt Duchesne could command more than $9 million. Yeah. Per season. So when he signed for $8 million, my first reaction was, well, at least it's not 9.5. But, you know, Matt Duchesne, I think, has shown in 2 seasons that he is not an $8 million player. I think David Poile, you know, had been blinded in his pursuit of Matt Duchesne for years. You know, I had called Matt Duchesne David Poyle's white whale. And he finally snagged him. And, you know, I think when you think about those two players in particular and their fit on this team, to me, Ryan Johansson, you know, seems to have bought into John Hines' vision. Duchesne, on the other hand, has been much slower, in my mind, to embrace it. I think you can expect more out of Ryan Johansson than you can out of Matt Duchesne. So, to me, you're going to try everything within reason, and that's the key phrase, within reason, to rid yourself of that contract. Even if it means, and I talked about this on, I also did Darren, Donick, and Chase yesterday, so maybe I'm confusing my time with Darren and Willie, but even if you're retaining salary, which you can do in this situation, you know, do you think you would have to give up less to move Matt Duchesne if you're willing to hold on to a portion of his salary, which, by the way, David Poile has never done.
Yeah.
David Poile has never done a retained salary transaction. You know, would you be willing to hold on to $2 million? Because, look, Matt Duchesne at $6 million, that's reasonable. It's still not great, but it's not eight.
Well, then you're talking about paying Kyle Turris $2 million
yes.
to not be here, and then at that point paying
Matt Duchesne.
Don't forget
Steven Santini.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got another year left on his buyout.
Paying Matt Duchesne at that point not to be here either. So,
right.
I don't know. That's the question. And we heard Jeff Merrick earlier this hour talk about the asking price for Seattle. It's high, as it should be at this point. I mean, if I'm Seattle, I'm handling it the same way. But if you're David Poile, there's got to be, and I'm sure these conversations have taken place, like how comfortable are you, how far are you willing to go if you're David Poile and the Predators to try to rid yourselves of one of these contracts? Like what is the absolute limit in your mind, Adam, for this expansion draft to, hey, we'll take Matt Duchesne off your hands if such and such happens, if it's a trade for a prospect, if it's a trade for a prospect and a pick, like what is the absolute limit that you're willing to go to if you're David Poile and the Predators just to rid yourself of one of these contracts?
I don't think you want to go overboard. And I thought Jeff made, as usual, a good point in his conversation with us about the Vegas expansion draft and the learning experiences from that particular experience. And, I thought, well, the GMs were, overly cautious last time in terms of trying to protect certain players or steer Vegas to take certain players, and they paid a lot. I think, the cautionary tale, which a lot of people reference, is what the Florida Panthers did in losing Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault. You know, Jonathan Marchessault, people forget, was a 30-goal scorer in his final season with the Florida Panthers. Then he goes to Vegas as a throw-in and had 75 points in his first season, in the inaugural season of the Vegas Golden Knights, 27 goals, 48 points. So the last thing that you would want is to throw in a roster player. Like, for example, before Victor Arvidsson was traded, a lot of listeners, readers, texters were saying, why don't you throw Arvidsson in with Matt Duchesne? Well, what happens if Matt Duchesne and Victor Arvidsson, experience resurgence, in Seattle? You're going to have a lot of egg on your face.
Also, that's $12 million Seattle's taking
on
at that point.
Not happening either. But, of course, we don't have to worry about that anymore. To me, what's the limit? I'd be willing to give up, a higher draft pick and maybe not your best prospect, but someone of some value. Like, for example, Connor Ingram two seasons ago, had a fabulous season in the American Hockey League. He was an AHL All-Star. I think he was a first team postseason AHL All-Star. He and Troy Grosnick split the starts with the Milwaukee Admirals. Both of them played great, but Connor Ingram, very good. Last season, in January, Connor entered the NHL's player assistance program. He was out for a couple of months, played like four or five games with the Chicago Wolves, and that was it. Now that you have Yaroslav Askarov in the system, do you really need Connor Ingram? And Connor Ingram can, the Seattle Kraken also have to develop, a feeder system. They need players to go to their AHL team. If you're David Poile, are you willing to give up, let's say, that second round pick that you just acquired from the Los Angeles Kings and Connor Ingram to get rid of Matt Duchesne? Because you're giving up a pick in the top 50 and a solid goaltending prospect that can help Seattle down the road. Perhaps because Connor Ingram is not a known quantity in the NHL, perhaps Seattle would balk at that. But to me, I'm not going overboard. I'd be willing to give up a higher draft pick and, you know, a B-level prospect. I'm not giving up a second roster player. Like, if I'm not giving up Callie Yarncroak, for example, to get rid of Matt Duchene. I'm not paying multiple first-round draft picks. You know, at some point, you have to just, you know, swallow it and just deal with it. So, you know, I think they should try. But, you know, I'm not giving up the farm or anything like that to get rid of Matt Duchene.
So what would you be comfortable giving up for the Predator, for Seattle, to take away one of these big contracts for the Predators? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Got some text to get to as well on the other side. We'll do that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.